Welcome to Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And my guests today, who will be phoning in shortly, are from Bozeman, Montana. Gary Ferguson, author Gary Ferguson, and Dr. Mary Claire. And we're going to talk about something called full ecology. Welcome to Valley Voices. Just by way of introduction, Gary Ferguson is the author of 24 books on nature and science. That's amazing, including the award-winning The Carry Home, Lessons from the American Wilderness. And I believe, Gary, you were my guest on Valley Voices a few years ago talking about that book.
Yes, that's right.
Your most recent book is The Eight Master Lessons of Nature, which was published by Random House, I believe. And we'll discuss that later in the show. So welcome back, Gary Ferguson.
Thank you.
And welcome to Dr. Mary Claire, who is the former director of the Psychological and Cultural Studies Program at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon. And her research on the application of psychology in communities and identifying and correcting systems of prejudice and oppression is internationally renowned. Dr. Claire regularly facilitates strategic listening and planning workshops for NGOs, universities, government agencies, tribal groups, and schools. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mary Claire.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Amy.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you. I haven't been live on the air for this show for a little while. But let's jump in. I've been doing some research on full ecology, and I'm full of questions, but, you know, I don't know if we'll get to all of them. But first of all, what is full ecology?
We were hoping you to ask, Amy. Full ecology is this thing that happened when, against all odds, Gary and I met, mostly because he plays the blues harp, but we'll have to tell you more about that. Pretty much by accident 7 years ago. And for the 30 years prior to that, plus, Gary had been not only walking around the wilderness, and writing books about it. But he'd also been deeply involved in studying conservation science and other natural sciences and bringing that together with his wilderness experiences. Meanwhile, I'd been spending 30 years studying the social sciences and working with people who were preparing to be counselors and educators and public administrators. And so when we started walking and talking and walking and talking, forward came this idea that the things that Gary would talk about in the science, in the natural sciences, mapped onto what I was seeing and we know in the social sciences. And there was such a map that we saw that it might be a very helpful way of understanding humans' relationship with one another in the natural world, particularly in times of climate change.
Yeah, one of the things we like to say is that full ecology encourages us to reclaim our human nature, acknowledging that we are a unique species, of course, but we are an expression of the natural world. And so that which allows the natural world to thrive is of great interest and great application in human society as well.
Well, you know, we talked yesterday a little bit about deep ecology, and I picked up something from the Foundation for Deep Ecology, and I'd like to share it so that you can tell me maybe what the difference is between what you're doing and what deep ecologists are doing. So this is a quote from the Foundation for Deep Ecology. What it is it's and it's comparing shallow, what they're calling shallow versus deep ecology. Quote, the short-term shallow approach stops before the ultimate level of fundamental change, often promoting technological fixes like recycling, increased automotive efficiency, export-driven monocultural organic agriculture based on the same consumption-oriented values and methods of the industrial economy. The long-range deep approach involves redesigning our whole systems based on values and methods that truly preserve the ecological and cultural diversity of natural systems, end quote. It sounds to me like there's a little bit of full ecology in there. What say you?
Well, I would say that we're standing on the shoulders of the people who came up with this understanding, deep ecology, mm-hmm. and many others who have over time looked carefully at the interface between human community and natural community. And of course, we're standing on the shoulders of ancestors that we don't know precisely how they lived and functioned in concert with the natural world. And the first people of this country and the way that they lived in significantly more harmony. But the big difference between full ecology and these other ideas is that we look at how vital it is that we take care of our social ecologies if we are to be stewards and healthy participants in the larger ecology. And the social ecologies are the ones between us interpersonally and within us, the way we are with ourselves and the way we understand how we've been socialized mm-hmm. and pay attention to how we function and believe.
And I might also add, Amy, that the work you described to be done under the vision of deep ecology is extremely relevant, and that was very well articulated. I would suggest that the energy for that work, the commitment for that work, the ability to rally with one another, as humans are certainly capable of doing, in fact, we're genetically wired for it, comes from a deep connection and a sort of ability to take instruction from the qualities that drive all life on the earth. You know, there's such a payoff for this shift of perception, if you will, that full ecology points to, to be able to make decisions, to get up in the morning sensing the kind of kinship and the kind of community and relationship that exists among us humans, for sure, but between humans and the natural world. So this is a sort of primary energy phase to do the work that deep ecology calls on us to do.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, I went through your lovely website and listened to this month's update video, full ecology video. I have lots of questions from that. But how does the wisdom of nature show up in human beings? I mean, to my way of thinking, as a species, we certainly don't look very wise, especially to the non-human world. You know, I mean, how we treat the non-human world and in light of climate change and overconsumption and all of that. So how does the wisdom of nature show up in humans?
Well, maybe I should start by turning back the clock about 400 or 500 years and talk about subject-object thinking, which is really the foundation not just of Western science beginning in the 1500s and 1600s, but very much the basis for our systems of education, our economies, even often the way we practice our religion. And that subject-object thinking was very useful, led to lots and lots of wonderful discoveries, but it was based on isolating that which you wanted or needed to study from yourself as the observer, mm-hmm. and also isolated from everything else around it. So it was an isolation-based way of going through the world. And while it's a tool, we became so enamored of it that we, along the way, ended up living what Mary and I call the separation myth. We think that subject-object thinking, that reductionist thinking it's sometimes called, is reality, is truth. But if we turn to the natural world, again, of which we're part, we start to see these fundamental qualities that allow nature not just to survive and survive sometimes some massive disruptions, but to thrive. And I'll mention too, and Mary will hopefully jump in here to sort of build the bridge between the natural world and the world of humans. The first thing I would mention is connection. There is simply no way to overstate how fully ecology and biology right now are proving what a lot of indigenous societies have claimed all along, which is that everything really is connected. It's almost impossible to tell where a human being ends and the rest of the world begins. If you go out and walk under trees, you're going to be giving the tree carbon dioxide. It will give you oxygen. It will give you chemicals called phytoncides, which strengthen your heart and your vital organs. It's the sunlight that sets the hormone levels that allow you to sleep at night. It's trillions of microbes that came to live in your body after you were born that allow you to keep pathogens at bay that want to do you harm, that allow you to break down food and nutrients for your brain and body to use. And then the second one I would mention besides connection out of these eight that I've written about would be the power of diversity. Well, we've known in ecology for a very long time that the most resilient ecosystems are the most diverse ones. That's what really predicts how resilient a system will be after a forest fire or a flood or a windstorm. And that diversity allows life to reweave itself in very strong and quick fashion. Well, now, and Mary can speak to this perhaps more fully, we're realizing that both connection and diversity are critical for humans to realize their own creative capacity.
Yes, I would say that we're getting busted. Busted pretty big time.
COVID busted us first.
I'm telling you, that's for sure. And we're getting busted urgently on the human dignity front and what does it mean to be a human being. And so this subject-object legacy that Gary was describing has left us in this very weird place. We're sort of addicted to believing, and we've built whole cultures around this, to believing that we not just can predict and control, but we must. And if we don't, we're failures. And not one of us can. And so we walk around feeling like failures. No wonder we're cranky. And we also get oppositional, and we build then on these false oppositions and these polarities. But one of the things Gary and I were just talking about this morning, one of the things that we fail to see is that we get to have these conflicts, we get to have these complaints, because a lot is working. The proof that you are the natural world is the next breath that you draw.
Right.
You know, that
yeah.
You aren't flying off the planet because gravity is working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many, many indicators that as Gary suggested, we're completely interdependent here, but we've gotten in this bad habit of thinking that we're more important, but secretly we know we're not. And so the time is now for us to get right-sized and grateful and connected, and we'll see if the species can do it.
And, you know, so much in the news, rightly so, are the matters of social justice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is only from the separation, then, from subject-object thinking, that you can objectify an entire group of people, whether it's people of color. It's long been women who have been on the receiving end of that sort
from
of
the witch
of prejudice
in the 15th and 16th centuries.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, that attitude does two things. One, it's extraordinarily harmful to the people who are on the receiving end of it. But even for those doing it, in the dominant culture, whether you're overwhelming nature and trying to control it or overwhelming another group of people, is you lose the creative brilliance of the experience that those people bring to the table. And, you know, Mary was talking to me just the other day about how now there's so much research suggesting that not just in scientific breakthroughs, but also in corporate management, that the biggest successes, the most routine successes, happen by virtue of there being a very diverse team of people rising in the challenge. So given what we're facing right now, just in climate change and things like COVID, we need everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We need the maximum creative capacity of this species, and that means being inclusive. It means being connected.
Before we go on, I'd like just to take a bit of a break and remind listeners that this is Valley Voices. My guests today are author Gary Ferguson, a return guest, and Dr. Mary Claire, and they were talking about full ecology. Gary's most recent book is The Eight Master Lessons of Nature, and Dr. Claire and Gary are working together on something called full ecology. So we're sort of unpacking that, as they say. On your website, I was watching the June full ecology update video, which I found very interesting. And, you know, we've been talking about social justice, environmental justice and social justice, and the subject object thinking and isolation based thinking that started a long time ago. And another thing from the Foundation for Deep Ecology is, quote, the distinguishing and original characteristics of the deep ecology movement were its recognition of the inherent value of all living beings and the use of this view in shaping environmental policies. Those who work for social changes based on this recognition are motivated by love of nature as well as for humans. They recognize that we cannot go on with industrialism's, quote, business as usual, end quote. You know, to me, you know, when you talk about and we talked a little bit about beliefs, and you were talking about beliefs a lot on your website, without changes in basic values and practices, we'll destroy this diversity and the beauty of the world and its ability to support diverse cultures. And I'm to me, this is where full ecology comes in. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the first thing that Gary and I have just finished a book that will be published next spring. Actually, it looks like it will be launched on Earth Day of 2021 on full ecology with Heyday Books out of Berkeley. And in that book, we articulate four steps that humans can take to get back to our nature and really to put legs on Gary's eight master lessons, to make it so that those lessons aren't just out there and super cool, but that we actually connect with them and come to be able to live from them. And the first step in full ecology is actually to stop. And that sounds so counterintuitive. How do you stop when somebody's knee is on your neck?
Exactly. And how do you, exactly. And so can you answer that when we're all screaming at each other? Polarized protesters and cops?
Yeah, I mean, you are stopped at that moment. You are stopped. Everything is stopped at that moment. And that doesn't make that stopping okay. That's a forced, a cruel, a hideous stop. This stop points to is stop long enough to see and to make conscious the way we are run by this separationness, by the first thought that we all have, and we're deeply socialized to this, is what about me? Me first. I'm starring in the movie and the rest of your support characters.
Well, you know, I've seen that coming out with all of the mask situations, you know, people and state closures, people being angry about the fact that hair salons are closed and they have to have their hair cut and not wearing masks because it's a violation of their rights. And so to me, that kind of brings up and maybe people smashing in windows. I mean, to me, that brings in the me first idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all probably, well, there's so many symptoms. Everything we see is symptoms of that until we stop and look to the natural world and see how the natural world is constantly, constantly in the present moment. Now, all of this can become a Hallmark card, and that kills it. That's not what we're after. The stopping that we are seeing, are gaining, the instruction we get from the natural world to stop is to stop with all your stories, stop with everything. Here's a real good example. There's growing evidence that we need to be more and more in our bodies, and that we need to be in our bodies so we are able to question this narrative, this supremacy, and I'll use that word, of the white body. What makes white bodies more important than other bodies? And we don't even take time to get into our bodies to ask those questions. The stopping makes room for a functional humility that is out of our reach otherwise.
And, you know, one thing that also occurs to me based on what Mary just said, and you said as well, Amy, is that it's an encouraging thing to me that what we're really talking about in this stopping is to put down some baggage that we've been carrying for a long time that we don't really need anymore. And the good news is, gosh, everyone from Darwin to current evolutionary biologists to anthropologists have made a big deal for quite some time over the fact that the humans, like many, many other social mammals, are extremely gifted and able to succeed in the world because primarily of their inclination, their genetic capacity for connection, for sympathy, for empathy. So just because we're acting separate does not necessarily mean that's who we are bone deep. So part of the stopping is to ultimately access or be reminded of the incredible power we have through that sympathy and that empathy and that connection.
Well, we only have about 3 minutes left.
Oh, dear.
Can you believe this is fascinating to me? And we won't be able to go, we don't have time to go into the eight instructions of nature except to say that connection, variety, balancing, relatives, efficiency, resilience, elderhood, and uncertainty are.
Yeah.
And I find the uncertainty part of it fascinating because you used in the video today, Dr. Claire, you used the word baffled. And
yeah.
I think that baffled sort of reminds me of what Marion Woodman, the Jungian therapist and writer, calls the tension of the opposites, you know, to just live with this uncertainty. So we need to have a whole other conversation, you guys, on uncertainty. But before we go, can you give us a little contact information of your website and how to find your new book, Gary?
Sure.
So our website is very simple. It's just fullecology, all one word, .com, fullecology.com. And
you'll find on that website everything from monthly updates to courses that we've developed and also links to the Eight Master Lessons of Nature. There is a wonderful bookstore we support with all our heart up here in Montana called Country Bookshelf, and that book can be ordered at countrybookshelf.com and or wherever your favorite independent bookstore happens to be, we might say.
Yeah, people are loving the Eight Master Lessons. I'm biased, but I think it's brilliant.
Just a little bit biased.
Well, yeah, just a little.
I
think I found my publicist.
Well, it's really fascinating, and I wish we had more time to talk a little bit more about it. But again, that your website is fullecology, one word, .com. And
yes.
There are a lot of...
And people are welcome to be in touch with us directly through there.
Great. And there's
Also, Amy.
Yeah.
That tension that you were talking about, mm-hmm. that Woodman refers to, mm-hmm. in quite here in nature as human beings, between birth and death. Think of that. Mm-hmm. There's some tension for you. It drives us nuts.
It does, literally. Well, yeah. I really appreciate y'all taking the time to talk with us today, and hopefully we can have you on the show again, and we can talk a little bit more about all of this. Thank you very much. You've been listening.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.